This is Patrick from Sundrifter, and you are watching Seismic Sounds.
All right, Seismic Sounds of the Underground. We're back with another episode this week, as I'd like to welcome my guest today from Houston Sludge Doom Trio Stone Nomads. We got Jude and John who are joining me this week here on Seismic Sounds. Fellas, what's going on? Thanks for coming on. How are you guys after the 420, man? Feeling good?
Feeling as good as I can, my friend.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Great to see you guys, man. So I know a lot going on in the Stone Nomads camp. I know, in fact, you guys have been going, you know, I would say pretty much at a breakneck speed. I mean, since you put out Fields of Doom, the EP, a little over about a year and a half ago or so. You know, before we get into that, let's get into, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, you guys' history playing together. I know, you know, Jude, I know when I interviewed you about a little over a year ago, I remember for Aftershocks TV, you told me that you and John have known each other since, I believe, the 90s, correct? Did you guys never play with each other before? Were you just kind of friends in the same music circles? Kind of get into you guys' history a little bit.
Go ahead, Jude.
All right. Yeah. We met in high school, and John was a metal guy who moved from Tampa, Florida, and he moved over here to Houston, and I had just moved to Houston, and I was a punk rock guy. Mm-hmm. And we started influencing each other. You know, hey, you should listen to this. You know, we had passed stuff back and forth, and I knew he played guitar, and I played guitar, and I had been in some bands, and I don't recall. John, had you been in bands before in Florida?
No, nothing real, just playing with cousins and that kind of crap. Yeah, first actual band was in Houston.
Okay, yeah. So we went to high school together. Side note, the first band I was ever in, the drummer was Mike Kinnerty of All American Rejects.
Oh, wow, yeah, okay.
I taught him to play guitar, and then, you know, he's gone on and sold millions of records.
So yeah, man.
That's a side note.
John, actually the common link, you know, because he was the bass player in my first band as well.
Oh, wow, look at that.
So, I mean, we all kind of knew each other, but, you know, he was kind of the, I guess, the bridge to me and Jude really getting to know each other better.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, yeah, so we started hanging out. Like John said, he was in a band with Mike, and I was in a different band with Mike. And then we were like, hey, we should start a band together. And kind of where we met kind of musically was like crossover music and hardcore. Like we loved that stuff. And so we started playing like, you know, kind of New York style hardcore, like Warzone, Murphy's Law, that kind of stuff.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Sick of it all.
Yeah, you want to pick it up, John?
Yeah, basically we had been playing in similar circles, and we'd gotten into a punk band together.
Okay.
You know, it was cool. It was fun. It wasn't really my passion, you know, and his tastes were changing. You know, we were both kind of getting more and more into hardcore, and I just approached him and said, hey, man, you want to do something, you know, more influenced by, you know, Sick of It All, Agnostic Front, that type of thing.
Nice.
And so we formed a band called Retaliate about 96, I think. And yeah, we had a good run. You know, we got to do some cool shit, you know, open for Agnostic Front and
nice,
you know, open for Dropkick Murphys on their first run in the US.
Oh yeah.
Shit, got to play with Fear, DOA, a bunch of, you know, old school hardcore bands, and that's kind of how we cut our teeth, and you know, just kept going and gelling from there, and he kept getting more and more metal, and you know, my taste just expanded. I mean, he introduced me to a lot of deep punk that I was not familiar with, you know, so I became, you know, more well-rounded, got more into punk, he got more into metal, and you know, fast forward into the 2000s, you know, we both pretty much listened to everything, you know, any kind of heavy music, any kind of heavy underground music. So it was kind of one of those things where if me and him lived in the same place, it's like, hey, man, you want to start something? What do you want to do this time? let's do some Southern rock, let's start a thrash band, and so we kind of did that off and on. We were both working, raising kids, that type of thing. So we had a lot on our plates, and leading up to eventually around the pandemic time, opportunities just kind of aligned themselves for me to back to Houston. And I kind of had this in my mind to do more of a doom type of thing. Doom sludge, really, influenced by stuff like Trouble and Paradise Lost that I listened to when I was young.
Yeah.
Also kind of bridging that in with like the really sludgy New Orleans, influence that came in the 90s. So Crowbar was a big band for me. Of course, Down, I Hate God,
Acid Bath, right?
Yeah. And just kind of incorporating those two things and then still like putting in our other influences, Obituary and, a little bit of thrash and a little bit of hardcore and just this big melting pot of heavy stuff and see what comes out of it. That's kind of where Stone Nomads came from.
No, that's great. Yeah. And I'm going to get to that in a second and talking about your sound, because you just brought up exactly something I want to talk about. But before that, let's talk about now, it's the music. I know last month you put out the remastered version, of the first full length, At the Gates of Solitude, that came out late last year. And at first I kind of did a double take because I was like, wait, I know the album was already out. I had it on my Doom Charts list. It's a great record. And I was like, and then I saw it got remastered by, you talking earlier about, New York hardcore, about a guy who's remastered a ton of New York hardcore records, Alan Duchess. Grammy Award winning engineer there, Alan Duchess as well. So I guess it's sort of a two-part question. For one, what had you guys, what made you remaster it, want to remaster it so soon after it was released? And also, what made you go with Alan for doing that?
So I'll jump in and take this one.
Okay.
Basically, the original release was a real struggle for us.
Okay.
And I say us, it's me. It's definitely 100% my fault. it was one of those situations where I was responsible for mixing the album. The mix was a very difficult process for me. I had a lot of personal stuff happening in my life that just kind of coalesced right around that same time and just made it really difficult to kind of get through the process. So the mix itself was just not satisfactory to me. And so I had a friend of mine from the Houston scene here, Travis Weathered, band Foster Mother. I had him, try to salvage it as much as he could through mastering it. And he did, he did a good job with what he had, which was basically, polishing a turd, for lack of better explanation. The actual digital masters, they sounded okay, but they were just lacking a lot of the oomph. The dynamics were kind of sucked out of it. It was a little noisy. Like if you listened on certain systems, you could really hear just a lot of extra noise from the guitar, just things that I should have really taken care of in the mix that didn't happen. Just very distracted kind of situation. And so we got through the album release cycle and, all the shows and everything we had, kind of little regional tours and things like that. And once we got to the end of the year, I was just kind of like, I'm just not quite happy with it. And, I'm just one of those people that, if I'm not happy with something, I'm not going to leave it be.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to go ahead and remix the album. And, just basically start from scratch, it's the same recording, but it's just, it's completely remixed, reimagined slightly. But as far as how Alan came to the picture, I'd kind of been researching different guys for mastering. And, I wanted someone that just really had a good understanding of the music, good understanding of analog equipment, I really realized I need to go with a, you know, kind of a true pro to be able to do that. Cause you know, mastering is something that you can do digitally, you know, right here.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sure.
And it turns out okay. You know, it's not bad. I mean, I mastered, you know, like the Fields of Doom, the digital version that was done, you know, by me digitally. Mm-hmm. But, and you know, probably more than half of the stuff that you hear out there is mastered digitally. But when you go to real analog equipment and guys that have been doing it for, you know, decades and decades, like Alan, there's just a different sonic, you know, impact it can make.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can hear that in his work, you know, go listen to, you know, like all his High on Fire catalog, you know, listen to all the Cannibal Corpse stuff he did. I mean, as soon mm-hmm. as, you know, Eric Rutan and him kind of teamed up on that, I mean, that band transformed. You know, listen to the mm-hmm. sonic of all those albums compared to the earlier stuff. It's like, wow, yeah, it's a different band. And so I, you know, I had him on my list, and two things really sold me that like this is the guy. So one is Ripple released an album from a band called Blood Lightning. You're probably familiar with it.
Absolutely. Boston. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty good album, man. Good yeah. stuff. Good songs. But the weight of the production was really good. And the mastering was superb. And I looked it up. I was like, shit, of course it's Alan. And mm-hmm. So then one other conversation I was talking to some buddies here in Houston. They're, you know, they're trying to figure out who's going to master their album. And, you know, they brought up the Last Vermillion Whiskey album out of guys out of Lafayette, Louisiana. And so I looked up and saw, of course, again, Alan. So I was like, that's it. I'm sold, you know?
Wow.
So yeah, I reached out and we, you know, we worked it out and, he killed it, man. It really sounds incredible.
I agree. You know, I mean, like I said, I loved the record when it came out, but when I heard the remastered version of it, man, I mean, It definitely, you know, makes a difference. And I think it was, you know, I'm hearing things that I guess I wasn't hearing before. I'll just say that, you know, and I think that also part has a lot to do too with your guys' sound. You know, that's one of the things about that I was going to get to talking about too is, you know, there is, I mean, it's hard to, you know, obviously you guys have the stoner, the sludge and the doom, you know, all the influences and metal influences or what have you, but it's, you know, for a band like you guys, you've got so, you don't have really a concentration, though, in one of those subgenres or areas. It really is such a hodgepodge and a blend. But really, listening back to this and the remastered version, yeah, there were things, every time I put it on, I'm hearing something new and different each time that I didn't hear the previous, you know, listen. You know what I mean? And that's the thing, too, is that's what's, I think, one of the great parts about the record, and is the more you listen to it, you're hearing things, new things every time. And I think that's something, you know, that really Alan, I think, helped bring out that maybe, like you said, maybe hadn't been there before. We'll be right back. But yeah, let's talk about, obviously, you got a big name on there along with Dallin. You got the legendary vocalist, Kyle Thomas, obviously, from Trouble and from Exorder. You guys went and did a great, I mean, just a killer version of The Tempter, you know, with him.
Thank you.
Yeah, outstanding cover. I mean, like I said, I heard it on the, you know, like I said, the mastered version, I thought it was great. But, you know, obviously, with the remastered version, it's just as good, if not better. You know, I just interviewed Kyle for Aftershocks, too. What a great dude, great guy, super nice guy. So tell us about how you guys got him on board and wound up connecting with Kyle to do that track with you guys.
Yeah, so, I mean, Trouble's a big influence, obviously. And so one of the first things we did when we got together was we talked about, you know, a handful of covers we wanted to do, just to have in the back pocket, you know, whether it was B-side material or, you know, throw on some albums. So, you know, Jude brought Dragon Time, St. Vitus track, and then I brought, you know, The Tempter from Trouble. And so we actually demoed them back when we first started the band and just kind of, you know, let it be, so, you know, kind of sit around and figure out, you know, when was a good time to use them.
And hey, so, don't forget Sign of the Wolf. We did that
one. Sign of the Wolf, that's right. Yeah, with the pentagrams.
Yeah, pentagram, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, when it came to The Tempter, we were, you know, tracking the album and we talked about it. It's like, man, it just really fits. You know, it's a dark album. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really, the whole album was born out of a really dark time, you know, for not only for me, but just for the whole freaking world. I mean, you know, coming out of COVID and all that.
Sure.
And, so it's just, you know, it just fit. And so we're like, well, let's throw it on the album. So we went about, you know, recording it and, you know, going as we would just normally, you know, and, plans were, I guess, tentatively for me to track it. And I was watching, you know, one of Kyle's posts, and he was just talking about how, you know, he's doing session work. Mm. And I was like, shit, man, how cool would that be? You know, the freaking, well, you know, first of all, Kyle, you know, I'm a huge fan of Exorder and Trouble.
Yeah,
sure. From back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And just to work with him at all would be cool. But, you know, just the added thing of him being the current singer of Trouble, I was like, you know, fuck, how much cooler could it get than that? Like, you know, let me reach out to him, see what he says. So I reached out and he was like, well, let me hear it. And so I sent him, you know, the demo version. He's like, fuck yeah, man, let's do it. And so he said, give me a day. So I sent him the guide track the way he asked for it. And an hour and a half later, he's like, how's this?
Wow.
It's what you hear, man. The guy is such a pro. I mean, he's just nailed it.
Wow. And,
it was such a cool feeling, man, to actually listen to that. Like, fuck, man, this guy's, you know, he's at the top, you know, he's top.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and we were just completely, completely stoked and excited about that. So one of the kind of letdowns of the release was that, you know, there just was no one really picked up on it media wise, you know, it was like, you know, we tried some different things with, you know how the whole PR game works. I mean, it's a crapshoot.
Sure. So, yeah.
We just felt like this was a perfect opportunity to take something that was like a really cool part of the project. You know, we're remastering it anyways, remixing and remastering. And why not include it on this kind of bookend EP and then, you know, promo it again. And that's what we did. It was kind of, it's like, all right, we're going to do this EP. It's got some unreleased stuff from the tracking sessions of the album, but we're going to go ahead and include this remastered version of The Tempter. And, you know, we put it out there, you know, promo blast and quite a few people picked up on it. So we're pretty happy about that. It's got a little buzz around it right now.
Well, and Trouble picked up on it and posted about it, and Kyle did too. So fantastic. That was cool. I imagine they were honored, and they wouldn't have said anything if they didn't think it was any good.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. It was cool to get their kind of thumbs up. You know what I mean?
Sure.
They surely wouldn't have posted about it if it sucked. So.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. And that's definitely a big boost, you know, for them to push that. I mean, not only it's great for you guys, obviously getting that approval, but it's great, like you said, to promote that by them putting it up on their pages and so forth. I mean, that's all, you know, you did a bang up job when you got that going. So yeah, absolutely. Now let's talk about the other, you know, the other thing is, you know, obviously the other half of the rhythm section, your drummer, you've got on the record, Mono Lords, Esmond Williams. You guys really just got, I mean, really one after the other. You know, every time I read up on you guys, I'm seeing stuff. You got a new big name involved with you, whether it's a producer or a musician. So talk about now Esmond being part of the band. I know, I obviously he's, you know, outside the country. So is he the drummer recording wise for you guys now? Obviously he's not good. I would assume not touring with you, but we'll talk about the situation with him, how you got him on board and what the situation with the drummer. I know you got a new drummer, I believe, that is touring with you guys, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. We have a new drummer, but again, take it away, John.
Dude, so,
let me tell you something before he starts the story. John has no problem reaching out to anybody, right? Mm-hmm. So if we come up with an idea, like, okay, John's like, I'll message him and see what happens. And that's how a lot of this is happening. So
that's great.
We were in between drummers. Well, kind of. We went into the studio and we were recording what was going to be the Gallows Walk EP.
Okay.
And it's a track that it was not working very well. So we thought, all right, we've got to get like a pro to come in here and record the rest of these tracks while we're trying to sort out our drummer situation. So John saw a social media post by Esmond again, like, hey, I'm doing some studio work. You know, I'm doing some, I'll be a hired gun. So then John reached out to him. And what happened, John?
Well, yeah, and I actually knew Esmond because we had worked on some mastering before.
Okay.
So the line of communication was already open. It was just kind of like, hey, you know, I saw, you know, that you're doing some session stuff. You know, we're looking for, you know, someone to step in and do this album. And, you know, it's kind of like, do you really have time to do a full album? And, you know, of course it's like, well, let me hear it, you know, let's see what it sounds like. And so we, you know, he checked it out, you know, he loved it. He loved the material. And, so we're like, well, let's do a test run. And so we did the Pentagram track. So we did that and released it as a B-side. And then we also did kind of a test run of Frigid, off of the last album. And, you know, it was perfect. I mean, he's exactly what we needed for that album. You know, someone that just understood that the sludge, the push pull dynamics and, you know, kind of where to take the beat to the front edge of the rhythm and where to pull back, you know, and just kinda, you know, work. Cause we're not a traditional stoner metal band where
the
drummer is definitely always hanging back a little bit. You know what I mean? The drummer has to push forward sometimes with our music because we've got some of that obituary influence and, you know, some of the hardcore thrash and stuff. So we needed a guy that understood that. And so he fit the mold perfectly. And, you know, so it worked out great, man. He killed it just kind of like Kyle did. You know, it was like, well, here's the timeline. Can you work with this? And it's like, yeah, let's nail it. And so, yeah, we went from there. We finished it. And the door is always open to work with Esmond. The guy is great. You know, he's in multiple capacities, whether it's drumming or mixing or mastering or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a well-rounded dude. But as of right now, we finally found, you know, a guy that we feel we can move forward with on not only on a touring front, but on a recording front.
Oh, cool.
Okay. You know? And so it's honestly, it's like two different skills. You know, there's guys that are great live players that, you know, the studio environment is filled with a different kind of pressure.
You know? Sure. And,
so you have to have kind of two skill sets to be able to do those two things. And so, yeah, Ben Wozniak's our guy, and he's, we're actually in pre-recording right now for the next project and taking him on tour as well.
Awesome. No, that's great. You know, and I want to expand on something you were talking about, you know, with your guys' sound, the push pull, You know, and that is the thing, you know, is, you know, and I remember talking to Jude about this last time is, yeah, you've got those, you know, those mid-tempo grooves that go, and then you've got those now slow tempo breakdowns. Like you said, you're not a traditional stoner band. I mean, I don't really think you're a traditional band in general, which is a great thing. Like I even use the song, you know, probably my favorite song on the record, Upon the Hands of Gods. To me, like I said, I really feel that's what your guys' sort of formula or style, whatever you want to call it, is. It's similar to what you did on the first record, but I think on this record, At the Gates of Solitude, was you really filled everything else around it so nice. I think you guys had that, you know, really solid bass sound that you obviously instilled on Fields of Doom, but what you've done on this, on the, you know, the full length, is really taken that and expanded and added all this other stuff around it, which is why I think it makes it such a really complete record. I mean, the leads on especially on Upon the Hands of Gods, it was, I thought you did a great job on those, John. And you know, is, I mean, what was it, I guess, that you really wanted to expand on or accomplish really on the full length that maybe wasn't there, you know, yet with Fields of Doom? And did you feel like you've done that now, just adding in, whether it was bringing, you know, adding in different leads or just different, you know, like you said, you've got some death metal on there, some Obituary. You know, maybe I think on Fields of Doom, maybe it was a little more stoner doomish, but on the full length, it's really all over the place. You know what I mean? And it's unpredictable, which is, I think, what really makes it so solid, in my opinion.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I mean, as far as, you know, how we got from point A to point B and all that, I mean, you know, part of it was, you know, we had a bunch of songs written at different times. And we kind of decided, like, at the Fields of Doom point, it's like, all right, what are the best kind of group of songs to release to get started with right now? You know, because as far as songwriting is concerned, we're pretty, I guess, prolific, for lack of better words. We have a shitload of songs. Like, you know, we've been, you know, there's something to be said for, you know, knowing this guy for as long as I have. And both of us just, that's, it's in us, you know, we're songwriters, riff writers, songwriters. I mean, you know, in our free time, you know, you definitely probably going to find us, you know, picking up a guitar somewhere, drinking a beer and just jamming out some riffs. And that's what we both love doing. So there's a lot of songs to pick from. And we, you know, basically the situation at Fields of Doom was like, this is the material that felt right to start with. And, it was by no means at that time what we were ready to rest our laurels on. You know, sure. We had bigger vision, bigger sights. And we already had a lot of these songs written at that time. So we knew the next album was going to be a big step forward as far as, you know, the level of progression in the music. And, you know, that's going to be something that continues. I mean, we're not an AC/DC kind of band. You know, we're definitely going to be, constantly tweaking and adding to, you know, because we have a lot of different things to pull from. I mean, ultimately, you know, we're just trying to be a heavy band, you know, a metal band. You know, at some point, you know, there won't be a label that really describes it. You know, it's just Stone Nomads. You know, it's metal, I guess.
And I know for me personally, I don't know how John feels about this, but I think our songwriting is a healthy competition, because while everyone's credited on the album, because either album, right? Because everyone brings something in, like a little piece here and there. But really what we do is kind of write songs on our own. Like, and I'll bring a song that I've written and John's like, oh, that's a cool song, you know, or if he likes it, you know, and then he's like, oh man, that's really good. I've got to go back and do something that's really good. And then John will bring a song. Like some of, I'm not going to tell you what we're recording right now, but there are some songs that John has written. I'm just like, oh my gosh, man, these songs are so good. I've got to go back to the drawing board and write some songs, right?
Yeah, that's really okay.
And so it's not like a jealousy thing. It's a healthy competition. Like, oh my gosh, he stepped it up. Like,
no, I'm literally inspired by his songs. You know, it's like, I hear that, like, holy shit, man, that's really cool. It's like, you know, not only does it make me step it up a little bit, it's like, you know, it sparks ideas, you know what I mean? And I think we kind of have that energy that we just, you know, we're able to bounce it and feed off of each other like that. So it's a cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Drew, I remember, I think you remember telling me when I spoke to you last time that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you said, if one of you wrote the music, that the other one would then either do the lyrics or the vocals. Is that correct, or is it changed? I mean, how do you guys do with that? If you bring a song, and is it like fully your song and that's it? Does John add to it, or how does that work with you guys when you collaborate?
It's definitely a partnership, but the foundation is laid beforehand. Like, I don't write a song and collaborate with John about every specific aspect.
Okay.
Like, I come with a song and then I go, this is my idea.
Okay.
What do you think you could add? And sometimes there are specific parts where I'm like, I wrote this, I can't sing it. This part works better for your vocals. And John actually does a lot more of that, where he's like, all right, man, I wrote this song. In my head, I imagined you singing the chorus or you singing the verse. Okay. So I need you to come up with something. You know, and so it's collaborative in that sense, but in a lot of ways, it's also independent at first. Like, the impetus, the catalyst for it all starts on our own, and then we bring it like, okay, here is a mostly done thing. What can you do to improve it?
Got it. Okay. That's a cool formula. I mean, and that's the thing too. I mean, you guys, obviously, like you were saying, you've got so many different styles of rock and metal in your songs. I mean, how do you, I guess, go about, I mean, like you said, you said you've also got a lot of songs in general just written already. How do you then go about what to play when you guys have the range that you have? I mean, and you're bringing songs to each other. Is it one of those, like, you know, you come up with a song, hey, I got this song, let's check it out? Because you have so many songs, do you sort of go through them all and say, well, maybe we can work on this one because it's a little different. It's maybe, say, a little bit more up tempo, or this one's more. I mean, how do you guys do that when you're, I guess, maybe putting together a record? I mean, are you cognizant of what you want on it, or you just kind of go, well, this is what we feel the best songs are, and then you put it on the record? I mean, how do you go about, I guess, delineating what songs you're going to use? I mean, what songs you're going to kind of not use for the time being?
Well, I guess first, you know, as we write a song, we share it. You know, so it's like, okay, Hey, I got this, check this out. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of, you know, it's like, oh yeah, that's really good. Or, yeah, you know, it's okay. You know, or, yeah, that one sucks, man. I don't get it. Okay. And so we'll kind of take those and they're sitting in a folder, you know, on a Google Drive or whatever. And when it comes time to, you know, actually figure out what we're going to put on a release, you know, historically, me and Jude would meet up and we just kind of hash it out and be like, well, here's the feel I'm thinking, you know, I think this would be a good flow, this song. And, you know, and he would say, well, I really think this one would fit here. I don't like your idea of this one. Let's kick this one out. And so we just kind of hash it out until we feel that we both have a good balanced, you know, flow with the song that work for an album. Because, I mean, we really are trying to release not a collection of singles, but individual works that, you know, that you can play, you throw on a record player, and it's like, I want to sit down and listen to At the Gates of Solitude, not, you know, just this song and this song, you know, the rest of the albums. It's like, no, we really want to put, you know, put the effort in to make a full album. So, you know, we really work hard at kind of figuring that out. And it's cool to have a lot of songs to pick from. But, you know, we still end up writing brand new songs, you know, right before the release you know, just end up fitting in with whatever vibe the album has taken on. And sometimes the songs get reworked as well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And because we're trying to create like a journey, you know, a musical journey, a full album, it means songs that we really like don't make it. Sometimes, right?
Gotcha. Yeah,
it's like, okay, this song, it doesn't fit the flow, so what are we gonna do with it? Well, it's just gonna have to sit on the shelf. And you said at the very beginning, Matt, that it looks like we're running at a breakneck pace at times. And it's really because we're John and I are songwriters, man. We've been doing this for many, many years, and we're always writing new songs. So we've got this huge back catalog. You know, if we had the time to go in the studio for 3 months straight, we could release like 3 records.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not there yet.
Yeah. No, and I think it's, you know, you brought up a good point about, and it really is true, you know, we like At the Gates of Solitude. Yeah, that is definitely a record that you're right, you know, John, you were saying. It's not like when I listen to it, yeah, I'm not sitting down going, I just want to hear that one particular song. It is like a complete thing. It is, like you said, it's a comprehensive, you know, piece. It's you want to sit there and listen to the whole thing through because of how it, you know, all connects, you know, together with each other. Yeah, it's not, you're right, it's not a collection of singles. So that you've definitely accomplished that. There's no doubt that if that was one of the goals, that's definitely been accomplished, because that is the one thing I've noticed is, yeah, when I put on that record, it's from start to finish. It's not like, well, I love that one song, let me just hear that first and then maybe go back. It's like an old school sort of record experience, you know, where you right. It's like a vinyl thing. You put it on and you let it breathe. And, you know, it's and that's the thing, though. I'm sure, you know, because, you know, we're in a day and age, obviously, you know, where everyone's attention span is short. You know, that is a tough thing to accomplish a lot of times for bands because of that. You know, but you know, and considering that, like I said, we're living in that age where, you know, yeah, many don't want to do that. They're looking just for the singles and just the quick, you know, things. They don't want to really let a record breathe. I think, you know, that's what's, you know, challenging. But obviously, you guys are cognizant of that, and I think you've obviously proven, you know, how to now put together just a comprehensive record where people are, you know, there are still a lot of people that want that, and for the ones that do, this, you guys are the band, absolutely. For the people who are into, you know, that, you know, kind of experience musically. And speaking of that, just to go into another thing, the track Overlords. Now I want to talk about that, you know, because we've talked about all the different influences you have with you know, Stone to Sludge, Doom, Death, what have you. But, you know, I would have to say with that track, you know, probably the most impressive piece of music that you guys, I've heard you guys do, is on there with that proggy part where I feel like I was listening to Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson on there, man. I mean, that's really impressive, that progressive part. I mean, both of you guys just bouncing off each other. You could tell you guys have been playing with each other for a while just from listening to that track alone. What inspired you to do that? Because like I said, that was, talk about unexpected. You know, that's the one thing, like I said, you don't know what to expect from you guys from song to song. That definitely was a pleasant surprise when I heard that. And I think it really came out even better with the remastered version, because you really hear that super detailed, I think, on the new version. So talk about that track, especially that part, that progressive part in there.
So, yeah, I mean, the track itself is definitely, it's definitely unique, you know, within the catalog. And, you know,
I did not get it at first.
Yeah. Yeah, it was when I first showed it to him, it was kind of like, you know, when I was explaining earlier, it's like, yeah, that one's like, yeah, that's okay, and I don't get it was his response to that one. So it was mm-hmm. like all right, you know, it can sit on the shelf for a while, but I just really felt it was a good song. It was really unique, and so I really, you know, I pushed the issue, and you know, I'm glad I did. I think he is too, you know. Once the whole thing was fleshed out and actually recorded, you know, properly, you could really hear that, you know, the proggy thing. I mean, that's just a part of it's, it really is a part of both of our DNAs in different ways. I mean, when I think of Jude, you know, he has a big progressive side that doesn't come, you know, from like progressive metal or progressive rock necessarily, but it mm-hmm. would come from a band like No Means No. You know, I don't know mm-hmm. if you're familiar with them, but
I know that. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like just kind of more punk influenced stuff that was super progressive. He's got a very progressive bass style, just in general. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, he's got to hold it back a little bit to be able to fit the flow of some of the riffs. So to unleash him a little bit like that is pretty easy. I mean, he's always down, you know, for those kind of parts, and you know. I mean, progressive stuff for me, you know, just it's just a part of the DNA. And mm-hmm. so I just thought it was a good transition section to stick in the song, to go from this kind of like, you know, post-metal, sludgy kind of, you know, medium-paced thing into this breakdown that's just gets to this, like, really doomy, sludgy part at the end. It just needed something to really shake it up a little bit. And, you know, so that's what I came up with there.
Yeah, and if you had heard a lot of what John and I were doing in the late 90s, early 2000s, while we were doing, like, hardcore music, I mean, we played off each other a lot. Like, we were really influenced by a band like Gorilla Biscuits, right? Mm-hmm. And they had that twin guitar attack. But we both love Thin Lizzy and we love Iron Maiden, right? And so we didn't have two guitars. We were still playing in three pieces back then for the most part. So it would be a bass and a guitar playing off each other.
Okay.
John would take a melody and then he would switch and he's taking rhythm and I'm doing a melody on top of stuff. So we played off each other a lot back in the day. And so we just kind of continue that now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, like I said, that part is really just, it really shows, when I heard that, it was like, okay, I mean, you guys can pretty much do anything you want to do. You know what I mean? It just shows, you know, obviously how advanced musically you guys are. You know, I mean, a lot of times, especially with Doom, right, and Sludge, it's typically, you know, like I said, very slow tempoed and can be sort of monotonous. But you guys, obviously, you know, once there is a part that you have like that in a song, where it's okay, you're writing it for a little, you don't just sit there and write it out for 3-4 minutes and just kind of let that one part drive the whole song. And like I said, once again, it's sort of like it keeps the listener sort of engaged in guessing what's coming next. And so when you incorporate pieces like that into it, it really, I think, just shows the listener like, wow, yeah, these guys, I mean, have a huge range of what you guys, you know, are capable of doing. And it makes it really more, I guess, you know, it gives the listener a little bit more like, okay, they're anxious to see what you got coming next, whether on the next song, next record, or so forth. And speaking of next record, Beyond the Gates, which is coming out this summer, the new EP, that you guys have scheduled for, I believe, June 10th. Talk to us a little bit about that. Now, obviously, like I said, you got the remastered record out, but as I was saying before, breakneck speed, you guys are just, you keep putting out music, which is great. I guess it's what you got to do these days, too, right? You can't really sit there and just be absent and not put anything out for a year or so. So you got this cool, obviously, EP coming out. Go ahead and let the listeners know what they can expect on this.
So, I mean, Beyond the Gates, and like you said, you know, you have to keep people engaged. And, you know, we've just seen that it's important to keep releasing stuff. So Beyond the Gates is kind of a bookend EP to the At the Gates of Solitude, you know, release cycle, I guess you could say. And so these are a couple tracks that were recorded during those sessions that didn't get released. And we kind of found this formula when we did Fields of Doom. We did a similar thing where we kind of came back with the Fiery Sabbath EP to bookend that release and, you know, release a B-side and a new song along with a single from the album. And so in this case, we took the same kind of idea. It took the two unreleased tracks, plus the remastered version of The Tempter and then a remastered version of Overlords that we're just talking about. And, you know, it gives it a kind of a, like I said, a bookend. It's like, this is part of the At the Gates of Solitude family. You know, it was all recorded at the same time. And, you know, partly for the purposes of vinyl restriction, you know, you can, you know, your albums can really only be about 40, 44 minutes max. You know, so we had too many songs and, which is a common thing that happens when you have a whole plethora of songs written. And so, it's part of the At the Gates of Solitude family. And I think it just kind of completes the package.
No. Yeah, it's, you know, like I said, I'm really looking forward to hearing this. And I know, like I said, June 10th, it's coming out. Now, I mean, really, with you guys now, you know, like you said, at your age, you guys have been doing this for years, you know, together and on your own, still doing. You guys obviously, you know, to me, it seems like you guys really are on a sort of a mission now musically in some way. I mean, just due to how, really, like I said, how much you've been, you know, rising in the ranks in the heavy rock scene, you know, over the last, you know, year and a half. You've got, like I said, some really well-respected and known music professionals involved with on your records, whether it's musicians or guys in the studio. I see you guys are promoting yourselves, you know, professionally as well on social media and so forth. So, I mean, is the goal to just, you know, sort of keep doing what you're doing and just seeing where it goes? Or do you guys really have like a specific sort of or in a ballpark, something that you like a vision that you have for the band? Or is it just sort of you're just doing what you're doing and see where the pulse, you know, the pieces may fall? What is sort of your guys's, I guess, plan, if there is any, that you want to see Stonemads, you know, Stone Nomads sort of get to, if any?
The next Obituary. That's what we want. Nah.
That's the goal. Huh?
Yeah. No, I'll talk just a little bit and then I'll turn it over to John. I mean, we've always played music. We will continue to play music. We've reached a point like where we just want to be a little more serious, and we are like a little more goal focused. Back in the day, and John mentioned, you know, when we were in the same city, we would start bands. Like we kind of played in different parts of the U.S. and we would play out, and we might play out of town a little bit. But this last go around, you know, we decided we want to be pretty intentional and try to make this a more professional thing. Make this more intentional. Like, we are going to get out there. We're going to release really good records. We're going to play, you know, specific cities where we know there's rock fans and metal fans, and just a little more intentional than we have been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
John?
Yeah, I think, you know, giving it our all and taking it as far as we can is kind of the, you know, that would be the mantra at the end of the day. I mean, you know, we're at a point in our lives where, you know, our kids are getting a little bit older, and you know, it was important for us to be there for those early years, you know, 100%. And so we can only dedicate so much time, you know, because we're
sure,
you know, feeding our families and doing all this stuff. And, you know, between the two of us, we got 7 kids. So, you know, some full households.
Sure. And, yeah.
You know, for me personally, it was always kind of, you know, the goal was like, hey, well, you know, once I've got the family in a good spot, you know, I'm going to go harder at this because this is my life's work. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is something I've put everything into, and it's something that means a lot to me, you know, just, music in general. So it's been a goal to, at a certain point, transition to be able to really put everything I could into it. And that's kind of where this project started, was at the arrival of that time, you know? And, so that's, you know, to answer the question, yeah, we're trying to take it as far as we can, for sure. And with that being said, we're putting all into it. I mean, this is like beyond a full-time job while we're still working jobs. So, I mean, it's like, there's not a lot of time for sleep.
Like, yeah.
But yeah. It means that much to us. You know, it's not a hobby, man. This is a lifestyle. It's a passion. You know what I mean? It's part of us. It's in us, and it's something that we got to get out to the world, basically.
Yeah. No, and I think that's great. You know, I think, and you know, when I see, like I said, a lot of musicians like yourselves, like you said, you know, you've done your work, you've raised your kids, and, you know, you're at that age now where it's like, well, you know, yeah, you're still young enough where you can go out and do it and make it, you know, as you guys see, obviously the scene is doing really well. You know, it's, there's plenty of opportunities. There's so many festivals now, especially here, even in the States, we've got good festivals, where maybe prior there wasn't a lot. Here was mostly over in Europe, but there are those opportunities. And I do know that you guys obviously are ready to do this, you know, next month, just coming in a couple of weeks, you're starting on a summer tour you're doing with Redbeard Wall, which starts obviously in your hometown. I guess a sort of a warm-up show, I would assume, in the 4th there. And you're going to go obviously down to the Southeast and hit up a lot of places down there. You got the Maryland Doom Fest, obviously, in June that you're going to hit up. So yeah, talk a little bit about the tour. I mean, and this really the first, I guess, real kind of, you know, or biggest tour you've now done with Stolen Nomads, I'm assuming, correct?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jude.
No, I was just going to say, we've tried to do some things in the past, and, you know, like, it hasn't worked out as well as this. You know, we've done a lot of regional stuff. We played Louisiana. We played Texas. We played all over Texas. It's a big state, man.
Yeah.
But, we tried to go Midwest, and some things happened, and luckily this is all nailed down. We get to go out to Maryland Doomfest. And once we had that date secured, stuff started to fall into place.
Mm.
And so that kind of made a difference this time. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the past, it, you know, just kind of piecemeal put together shows made it a little more difficult. John, you want to step in?
Yeah, basically, you know, like he was saying, we kind of planned it around Maryland Doomfest.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, this is our big shot to get out there and really start doing this thing on the road like we've wanted to. And this will be the first of many. We're working on some stuff for the fall as well. We've got a festival out in Tampa, which is pretty cool. Tampa Doom and Gloom, we're playing that.
Mm-hmm.
And working some stuff around that as well. So, yeah, I mean, this is something we're going to be trying to do around every release and hopefully every year, you know, that's definitely the game plan, and, you know, get out throughout the US and over to Europe and hit the festivals and tour as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we're also looking for opportunities, opening for national acts. So
mm-hmm.
We're taking the show on the road, man. We're ready for it.
That's fantastic. You know, how is it, you know, when it comes to booking shows, some bands I talk to, that's really been, I guess, the biggest challenge, you know, is booking a tour where, you know, obviously you don't have 3 or 4 days in between shows, you know, cause it's difficult. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of venues obviously closing down around the country, you know, smaller venues. I mean, that's happened in a lot of places. And then you've got it where, you know, sure, you can go play on a Tuesday night and, you know, somewhere maybe in Oklahoma or something, but how many people are really to come out on a Tuesday, you know? So there's a lot of these challenges, I know, where it's like, you want to get on the road, but it's also like, it's costing money. It's, you're losing money on the road. You know, it's like, you're really spending money to, you're paying almost to play, you know, and, it's hard to really just even break even. You know, obviously, like I said, you guys are going to experience this, you know, this summer, how that, I guess, it goes. But has it been difficult to really to book shows with, you know, bands, I guess, in the similar vein to Stone Nomads, and to really build a tour around it without having large gaps in between? Has that been difficult? When you guys, for instance, were putting together this tour this summer, did you find that to be a bit challenging, or had that worked out pretty well?
Go ahead, Jude.
Yeah, man. Hey, John, talk for a moment. I think my dog's barking again. And then
yeah, so, I mean, it is very challenging, man. You know, we found that just booking in general has gotten so tough for bands of our size. And you know, whether it be here in Texas or, you know, going on tour, it's really hard to get venues to respond, promoters to respond, that type of thing.
Mm.
So we, you know, we were fortunate that we were able to actually get a couple booking agents involved that helped us put this together. And, okay. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, if we tried to do this last year, we weren't quite well known enough to pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just kind of at that point now where we're able to farm some of that stuff out to people that do that every day and that have those contacts where they'll actually get calls back and emails back, you know, versus us, you know, sending 3 or 4 messages in a row and mm-hmm. bugging the crap out of people and getting blocked. So it's a challenge, man. I feel everyone's pain out there because, you know, we're friends with a bunch of different bands and we're all going through the same crap. You know, mm-hmm. it's tough times. It's like you said, venues are closing down and there's a lot of good music out there. And then, you know, the bigger bands are out there touring and some of them have been forced to kind of go down into some of the smaller venues that we would play.
Yeah.
You know, so there's competition mm-hmm. there as well. And so even getting nights available, you know, it's it's crazy to think, like, on a Tuesday in Asheville, you know, 6 months out, that the freaking venue in town would be booked, but it is, you know.
Yeah, wow.
And it's, mm-hmm. that's happening everywhere. So you got to be way ahead of the curve on it, man. You got to, you really, if you want a tour right now, you got to be kind of reaching out and getting stuff set at the minimum 4 months out, but I mean, realistically 6 months or more.
Yeah, at least wow. 6.
Yeah.
Wow. Damn.
Yeah, you're not going to make anything happen if you're trying to do it 3 months. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
there won't be anything available, you know.
Wow. That's interesting. Yeah, and of course, you know, like we said, you know, there are a bunch of great festivals, but at the same time, everybody's trying to get on them. And wow. So the competition is just enormous. And I know for some of the, you know, the guys who do the festivals, talking to them, it's like, you know, they wish they could obviously, you know, book more bands than they can. And then it's hard for them to even choose who to put on, because, you know, it's just a difficult situation all around. But, you know, the good thing is, like you said, there is a demand there. The you know, I feel like the scene is getting, it's just getting bigger and bigger, both overseas and especially here in the States. And so the opportunities are, you know, should always hopefully be there. And like I said, you guys obviously, you know, got the tour this summer. You've got the remastered album. You've got the EP coming out. So you guys are really set up, I think, to really do some special things. And, you know, obviously we look forward to seeing you guys on the road. I hope you can get out here sometime in the West Coast. I know that's difficult as well. There's, you know, I mean, here in San Francisco area, you know, there's venues closing left and right. It's really dire. You know what I mean? So, but you guys are in a good location. One thing about Texas is, you know, everything seems to be doing pretty well down there from what I'm hearing and seeing. And, you know, it bodes well for you guys, obviously, to keep pushing music out there or anything. But so just real quick, guys, I just want to, again, obviously, thank you guys for coming on and doing this with me. Go ahead and let our listeners and the viewers know, too, what's the best place to, you know, go to keep up with you guys, where to buy merch and just all that good stuff where they can keep up with everything Stone Nomads.
StoneNomads.com website will have tour info. StoneNomads.bandcamp.com or Gravitoid.bandcamp.com will have merch, CDs, vinyl. Gravitoid.com website, you can also access everything through there. That's our record label. You can get to the, you know, the all the tour information, the merch, and different things like that. And then follow us on socials, Instagram, Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we try our best to interact with people on the social media too, man. Like, especially if you send us a message, we're going to respond to you. You make a comment, we're going to respond to you. So we're music fans, and we love it when that happens to us, right? And, you know, Kyle Thomas responds or mentions us, you know. So same thing here. Like, if you're getting on our social medias, taking the time to say something, say how you like it, we're going to say something back to you.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic, man. Well, Stone Nomads, everybody, go check them out at the Gates of Solitude. Fantastic full length. Check that out. And, of course, be on the lookout for the new EP coming out this June, called Beyond the Gates. They're on tour this summer with Redbeard Wall. Jude, John, thank you guys so much for coming on, man. Appreciate it. And, yeah, good luck on the road. And I can't wait to hear that record coming out in June, man.
Thanks for having us, man.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah. I am the center.